Ladies, gentlemen, we have a guest today that doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyways.
You're too kind, man.
Gavin Mordecai Rubenstein.
I like that.
I told you I'd get
Shalom,
personal.
Brother. Shalom.
I told you I'd get you personal.
You got my Jewish name. I don't know how you found that out, but I'm impressed.
Oh, there's a few more, man.
You can hit me with everything. I've got no secrets from nobody.
Let's do this. Mate, let's just kickstart this off where we're fresh off the back of another awards night. Can you talk about how you ended up bouncing back and regaining your number one spot?
Hard work, dedication, commitment, and drive. You know, focus on a goal. Taking the loss on the chin last year, wanting to immerse myself in hearing another name being called in that spot because, you know, I think over the course of the last 15 years, majority of the time it's been my name called at that spot. Welcoming that for the lesson that it was and using that to drive myself and propel myself, you know, through the ups and downs and the rigors of real estate to get back there. And we did. But what was more kind of liberating on the night wasn't necessarily my win. It was Ollie's. So we all know Ollie got number one New South Wales.
Yes.
Salesperson. I mean,
which is huge.
It's huge. And I think like a lot of people didn't expect it. Right. A lot of people are like, well, I didn't know that boy did that level of business. Because you've got to remember, Ray White's different, right? When I say Ray White's different, it's like there's real big competition. You know, a couple of these other agencies, not to say anything bad about them, I think all of our competitors are great, they're formidable, they give us a good run for their money, that's all cool. But like you look at Ray White, and in Ollie's category, you've got Warren Ginsberg, you've got Augusto Jericani, you've got dudes who are...
Big riders.
Big operators. And then you've got this silent assassin, and that boy's a killer. Very few people know him in a way I know him, who's just come and taken the top spot. So that for me, without question, was the highlight, right? I've done number one principal before. I've done number one international. I did it as a salesperson 7-8 times. You know, it's now being able to give someone the blueprint and full credit because it was his execution, his work ethic that created that. But if you ask him, he'll be upfront. He'll tell you it was probably more of a dream for me to see him get that than it was for him.
Really?
Ask him.
That's real leadership, leading from the front.
Yeah, I think... I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's okay. When it comes down to it, you've obviously built this amazing career, but then you've had to take a step back with the rebranding and then obviously a move to Rose Bay. Mm-hmm. How did that affect your business and how did you overcome it?
What step back do you think I took?
In terms of a new brand.
I was a step forward.
Step forward.
Right. So perspective. Narrative. What's your narrative? I've never taken a step back in my career. And if I have, it's been to take, you know, 10 steps forward. So, you know, my whole idea of that process was only going to bring good to myself, my business, and the people who represented the brand. Bless every single one of them. I've got the best team in the business. I mean, every move that was made was strategically done with care. I saw it as a huge opportunity to move forward. And if you look at the numbers of the business, myself and everyone who works here, it underpins it.
Yeah.
And numbers don't lie. Like real estate agents lie. You know what I mean? Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, you got a lot of good guests on this podcast. I love what you guys are doing. And I'm talking generally. And I've always stood by that. The numbers don't lie.
It's true. And when I mean take a step back, I don't mean in terms of branding. I mean in terms of momentum. Like everyone's seeing you out there with one brand and having to shift it. But it didn't affect.
But you said it yourself. Yeah. Number one principal international for Ray White. Well, let's talk about that category. Josh Teslin.
Yeah.
Dave Walker. Vivian Yap.
Killers.
Matt Lancashire.
Killers.
Do you want me to keep going? Like these guys are, you're talking about arguably the best of the best in the game across Australia, not just the eastern suburbs. So if anything, it didn't decrease my momentum. It increased my momentum. And if you haven't got that by now, in time you will.
And why Rose Bay then? Because is this the only agency in Rose Bay?
I think there's a couple in and around, but no one that It's, I mean, it's the main one, yeah.
Why Rose Bay? What was the decision around making the move here?
Look, when you look around this little pocket where we are, there's no other agent, like right here.
Yeah.
Where it's like Double Bay saturated. Can't walk down the street without seeing a bunch of peacocks in their suits.
Yeah.
but the opportunity to get into this building was golden.
Mm.
Like when you think about it, and the play was, you look at the fit out and you say, wow, this is a beautiful fit out and it's a great environment. And yeah, a lot of thought has gone into that. But the play here is the position, not the fit out. You are located between two traffic lights. It's a very busy intersection. This T junction at Dover Road is like, if you live in the east, you got to come through it. And if you own a house to my left, every best street in Rose Bay, beachfront, Collins Avenue, Tivoli, Dumaresque, going up to Vaucluse, Watson's Bay, the most expensive real estate in the world, you got to drive down New South in order to get to where you want to go. You got to drive past you. So that was the thought process behind it.
Touching on thought process, when I think of Gavin Rubenstein, one of the things that I admire is that you've been someone who's what I consider self-actualizing. Your brand is your brand. You don't work, you collaborate with people, but you don't take consultant from someone above you, from my perspective.
Right.
Like everything you do is Gavin Rubenstein. It's the Rubenstein Group, TRG.
Right.
How have you been able, like a lot of people would look up to that and I know when I was starting out, you look to people to help shape you, mold you, sure. and influence your decisions. But from you, it looks like you set those decisions. Is that, how has your mentality been from your career and how would you explain yourself if that makes sense?
Well, I've got a lot of good people around me. And so whilst, you know, I'd love to sit here and take all the credit for everything that is going on and has gone on, that's just not the case. Like when I get asked about the silver bullet, right? What's the silver bullet? Have you done it so consistent for such a long period of time? What's the secret? I'd have to say number one on that list is having an ability to surround myself with incredible people and being able to retain them. So, and that's evolved over time. But like when you really break it down, you got a couple of juniors that have spun in and out of this door as they have every real estate office in the country, let's face it. But when you have a look at the core team and the people I was with from the start, the people I made the move with from the Double Bay office, they're still here today. You have a look at the relationship I've got with my brother, Jared, who, you know, when you say I don't answer to anyone, I 100% answer to him. I've got a couple of very, very experienced, much smarter than me, much more business savvy than me, people in certain places to give me strategic advisory pointers. And then I've got my mentors. And when I say mentors, they're people who don't even know me, but people who I look to for inspiration to be able to continue to move forward. So there's a lot of people involved in making TRG what TRG is. I guess I'd just be the pioneer behind it, driving it through.
And is that something you've always aspired for, or did it shape organically over time?
I never wanted to do this. Like at the core of it, I'm a simple-minded dude, right? I just wanted to list and sell. That was it. Yep. I didn't want, like, you know, most real estate agents do not want this smoke. And when I mean this smoke, I mean own a business, manage X amount of people, run a brand, and then list and sell at the highest level or one of the highest levels, right? So, but like most major monuments in my life, I was put in a position where I had to go in that direction. And then the more progress I started to make in that direction, the more I started to identify, hey, all right, I like, you know, a lot of stress comes with this and I've got to put a lot on a little back. But it's worth it. And I like being challenged and I'm motivated by stimulation, right? Like I like difficult paths. I don't know why. I don't know where it comes from. I haven't even spent too much time thinking about it because I'm moving at such a quick pace. But the harder it's going to be, the more I want it. Because when I overcome it, it's just such a great feeling. And I've done that so many times. And so here we are.
Let's bring it a little bit back. Your first job in real estate. Carly Hurwitz. Were you still driving the grey Mini?
Yes, I was. Wow. I had a grey Mini Cooper S, yeah. Wow. And she's a really good buyer's agent now. I like Carly. We do a lot of business together.
Wow. So when you were there, mm-hmm. would you have done anything different as an associate agent?
I would have watched my mouth a little bit. That'd be about it. But again,
watch your mouth.
I felt like I had realizing and understanding that she was giving me an opportunity, and remembering that she was paying my bills at the time.
Yep.
And so, you know, we talk about always this relationship with ego, whether you're a real estate agent or not, but it's obviously most prevalent as a real estate agent. I mean, when you're a younger guy coming through and you don't know much and you're maybe a little bit insecure, ego creeps in. I think ego will always tend to creep in no matter where you're at. So you've got to manage that. But I don't regret. I've got zero regrets in my life. So it's not that I regret, you know, maybe saying some things to her I used to say when she told me to go get her coffee or something like that. But ultimately, yeah, I wouldn't do anything different.
Yeah. What about when it came to becoming your own agent, stepping out, becoming your own solo agent? Would you have done anything different or to progress it quicker?
Well, that's a good question, and it's kind of attached to what I said before about these pivotal moments in my career where I've been forced to take a certain road and haven't necessarily wanted to at the time. So I was an agent on my own for 2 years. I was an assistant, excuse me, on my own for 2 years up until I was an agent. And how that worked out was...
And that's still not a very long time.
But this is what I'm saying. Yeah. So it was quick.
Mm.
But like, thank God. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for it. Like I say, every pivotal, everyone since I started my career, I've been led on the right direction. And I've got a wholehearted belief in that. At the agent I was working with at the time, Carly had left after a year. There was another gentleman who I was supporting. And like when I say I was hungry, man, I've never seen me in a young real estate agent still. I was...
Really?
Nah. I see flashes of it and I see glimmers of it, but I've not seen it yet because... You know, the agent who I was supporting at the time, he was just living. He liked surfing. He liked holidays. He liked doing all this shit. And I was just a telephone terrorist, man. Because I knew doing what I needed to do was going to get me to where I wanted to go. And it was as simple as that to me. And so I made cold calling and prospecting like a positive process. And I enjoyed it and I hit it and I went hard and I got in door after door after door after door. And I made him a lot of money in that second year that I was an assistant. And he, you know, I turned around at the end of the second year and I measure kind of everything because I think, you know, you manage what you measure. So I always like to have a look at numbers, what I'm doing, how I'm going. And I sat down with him at the end of the second year. I said, look, I've brought X dollars into your business, which I think was like 70% of his income for the year.
Wow, jeez. 70%.
Yeah, yeah. He was in his 50s. So completely different stage of life. I'm 20 years old, 21 years old, 22, however old, can't remember exactly. And I was just like, look, I love working with you. The gray hair helps. Particularly the houses I was selling and the people I was dealing with, right? We can have a really good thing here moving forward. We can do something cool together. But you're paying me $2,700 a month, man. And I'm making you a lot of money. We got to shift the deal. And, you know, he turned around and in plain English, basically told me to fuck off. And he said, wow. He said, look, I'm the agent, you're the junior. Word for word, verbatim, yeah? And that was the kick in the ass I needed to go in the direction that has ultimately led me here. So like I say, at these pivotal times in my life, I feel like when I'm being told, and I know this may sound esoteric, but being told indirectly what direction to go in, I'm always told and it's never wrong.
Yeah.
When you say hunger, you've not seen anyone with that same level as yourself for those years. A lot of the people we speak to on this podcast that are super hungry in nature typically have some level of trauma or backstory which has fueled that hunger.
Yeah.
Getting a little deep, you don't have to answer it, but just something that comes to mind, what would you say it is?
Good question.
That makes that lion's belly hungry.
So, look, I think that's evolved so much over time. And like I say, I don't mind you asking any questions. I think just to scratch the surface on it, back in the day, I was always the poor kid. I was the poor kid surrounded by a lot of wealthy kids. My parents were the sorts of people whom Like I still haven't been overseas with my parents today. If we wanted to go, say, to Terrigal, they had to save money in an envelope over the course of several months in order to afford to do that. So the one not negotiable for my mother was like, he's going to private schooling. No idea why, no idea how the course would have been different for me if I didn't, but that was just her not negotiable.
So this is while your dad's owning a chemist and your mum's a beautician.
Yeah, mum's a beautician. Dad didn't own a chemist at that point. He was working. Okay. He was working for someone.
Okay.
Yeah, he worked for someone for about 20 years.
Okay.
As a pharmacist.
Yeah.
And so I've been going to private school. I could always get along with people. I always got along with everybody. Didn't matter, kind of all walks of life, right?
Mm.
And I had a lot of friends, and I ended up being surrounded by a lot of, you know, very affluent people. And I went to, you know, their huge houses. And then they took me on holiday with their families. Like I went on overseas with their holidays.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I ended up dating a girl who was very, very wealthy. This is when, like, my first love, when I was like, it's always about a girl.
It is.
It's always about a girl. And I've never actually said this before. She's very, very, she came from a very, very wealthy family. And I was very young and I definitely felt inadequate in a relationship, right? I felt like I couldn't provide. I remember she used to say things like, you know, well, I've flown business class my whole life. And so that,
really?
You know, that would be my expectation moving forward whenever we'd want to travel. And I was like, well, I'm making 18 grand a year, man. I can't afford to fly business class. But that probably at that stage was part of the motivation. That coupled with the fact that all I ever did when I grew up was watch my parents work. They didn't have a life. There was zero lifestyle. Like going out for dinner for them on a Saturday night was a highlight. That was a highlight for my parents.
It's like their birthday dinner and that's it.
You know, on a Saturday night, if they weren't working, if they didn't have work, if my dad wasn't in the shop till like, you know, three in the morning catching up, that was a highlight to them. So I think that experience plus watching my parents just work and have zero lifestyle were my big logs to put on the fire when I was starting out. Yeah, I saw this industry as an opportunity to make an uncapped income without a tertiary education, and I wasn't going back to school. So I didn't have a plan B, and I knew from the moment I started looking around at who was good that I could do the same.
And is that when you left Moriah to go to Redham House in year 9?
Dude, I like you've done some research, man. I actually left Moriah to go to Redham for dancing opportunities.
Break dancing, break? Right?
I used to be a dancer.
Man, I can tell. We've seen the reel. I told you I'd get you.
Anything that could have distracted me from studying, I wanted to do. And like, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, I wasn't, you know, going to be a basketball player. I wasn't going to be a footy player. I couldn't shine in that regard, but like I had rhythm, I could move, and girls love dancers. So that was my edge. That was my thing. That's how I got the attention. And so I've never been afraid or shy of a big stage, right?
It's really funny. Guys are always motivated by by women.
Girls, always, man.
Every time.
Yeah.
That's one of the main reasons why I think I'm driven so much. Similar-ish story. I was dating my first love too. Same time her uncle was a billionaire. Saw a crazy life.
Yeah, you're exposed to it.
And I'm like, I can't have anything else.
Yeah.
I want to get there.
Yeah, cool.
But it's now all about the chase.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a lot of, actually quite a few of the same questions come through from the viewers.
Cool.
And it comes down to young agents trying to break into a high-end market.
Yeah.
Did you start off just selling the high-end stuff?
Yeah, straight away.
Okay. How do you do it?
The exact same way you do any other transaction. Starts in your mind.
Yeah.
Like most. If you are afraid of it or you think you can't do it, then you can't. But if you learn your stuff, you've got a plan, you work out what your way is, what's your niche, what's your in, you'll have no problem. Like mine was personality, it was product knowledge, really knowing the shit, like another level, knowing what was going on in the areas that I was servicing. And then I leveraged off of a more successful agent whom I knew was going to give me a much better chance of getting the business than if I was just on my own. And my perception of that was 50% of the pie is better than no pie, and kind of viewed it as kind of an apprenticeship period where I would watch how he worked and I would learn and I would take what I liked, add it to my repertoire and build this style of my own. Do that for a couple of years. And then, you know, once you crawl and to walk, learned to run, sprint, and then you learned to fucking fly.
So you wouldn't start off building up in terms of price ranges. You'd just go straight to the top if there's a chance.
Well, you gotta fix your energy. Mm. I always say make passion your paycheck. So like I love the big houses. They excite me. Now there's so much more than just the money involved with it.
Mm.
It's what's gonna get me flowing. What's gonna excite me to go to work today? What am I gonna enjoy marketing? What am I gonna enjoy working? What's gonna positively drive my energy? What's gonna positively impact me? You know, that's always been what it's about. And from a very young age, I've wanted to play at the top end of town. I've wanted to play at the Mecca. So, you know, one argument could be, well, start where you can. My view was, why waste time? You know, let's start this off right here, right now. I had a great opportunity at Bondi when I started, and I turned it down because I got the opportunity at Double Bay. Now, it wasn't the ideal opportunity I wanted with the agent I wanted, but I took it because it was my in. And back then, you had to be positioned in Double Bay to sell the big homes. So just remember, as real estate agents, and I always say this, our two commodities, and we've got two, everything else is noise, time and energy. That's it. I don't like wasting time.
How do you keep your energy flowing then? When you're running at such a high level, you're obviously back to back all day, every day. How do you keep that energy?
Great team, amazing support. Like I say, a lot of people behind the scenes that make it look seamless. Focusing on what makes me feel good. Not being naive about it to the point where I think just everything is butterflies and rainbows, because it ain't, particularly in this game and in life in general, right? It's a hard slog, yeah? It is. Everyone's got challenges in their own ways and things that they're dealing with outside of real estate. You add real estate and residential sales in the mix. It's
at least gray hair early.
Exactly. It's challenging, right? So making sure I focus on what drives my energy positively. I've got a no arsehole policy, right? I don't want to deal with arseholes, particularly where I'm at in terms of business cycle now. I want to deal with people who want to deal with me. Here's how I'll do it. Here's my presentation. If you think someone can do it better, best of luck.
Yeah.
Absolutely best of luck. Like, no problem. Abundance mentality, I think that's important. Making sure I have my breaks, one in the middle of the year, one at the end of the year. Making sure I'm very fit, healthy, because, you know, you look good, you feel good, you do good. I always say that. I believe in that phrase wholeheartedly. Mm. They're all related. Working out in the morning, sometimes twice a week, Pilates, weights, making sure Sundays are time to be able to switch my mind off so I can operate at such an optimal level for the other 6 days of the week. All of these little things that are in place that I've kind of refined over the course of, you know, my 15-year career.
Are there any breaks in the middle of the day to reset?
No. I eat lunch at my desk every day.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm sitting down for lunch with a client, it's because we're talking about a deal or an upcoming deal or we're celebrating a sale. But, 9 out of 10 times I eat either in the car or my desk, of course.
How did Lux Listings come about, and how much do you think it's affected your business personally, personal brand?
I don't know if I've got a personal brand anymore. My brand is TRG. Like that's been my MO anyway. I think the further I've got, the more private I want Gavin Rubenstein to be.
Okay.
And the more at the forefront, I'm happy for TRG to take place. Lux Listings, how did it come about? I got approached by a couple of producers, a guy called Ben Scott, and he was like, did all his research on me. He knew more shit about me than you did. He didn't know Mordechai, but he knew some stuff, right?
What about the tattoo on the back of your arm? Does he know that?
He doesn't know what.
Telling you, man.
Good work. Okay. You win. but he dug deep, right? He went to go speak to my friends. He just found out a lot of stuff. And he basically said, look, we want to do a show on you. And we want to build some characters alongside you because we think, you know, Sydney real estate is some of the most exciting in the world. And he wasn't wrong. So I said, look, happy for you to film a pilot. If I don't like the pilot, I'm not going to be part of it. Because then and even now, I'm very fastidious with how I manage my brand, whether it's Gavin Rubenstein or TRG. So we filmed a pilot. He showed it to me, and I said, "That's dog shit. I want nothing to do with this."
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, I mean, lots of people over the course of time have said, we've got this idea, we want to do the show. So I was kind of at the point where I was just like, I got to see it to believe it, right? Mm. Saw the first pilot, it was shit. Then he disappeared for 6 months, called me out of the blue one time, and he said, "I've got Amazon interested." To which I said, "Now we're talking."
Mm-mm.
Now we are talking. He said, "Would you be open to meet, you know?"
So, he wasn't even with Amazon at that point.
Not to start with, no. He goes, "Would you be open to meeting him?" I said, 100%. I'm open to meeting again. See it to believe it. I met him. I sat down with him, and he was like, I don't know whether he was briefed or not of what I liked or who I was, but he kind of said, "We want to make Sydney look epic."
Mm.
He said, "High end." He said, "Luxury. We want to film it in a way that Australian TV has not been filmed before." And I was like, where do I sign? You know what I mean? I'm like, this is what I've been waiting for, because essentially, indirectly or directly over the course of my career, if you look at the way I marketed myself when I was younger, when no one knew who Gavin Rubenstein was in the real estate market, it was hard and it was heavy, right? Like, because I needed people to know. I needed them to know this is my brand, everything my brand stands for, and I was a content machine pumping it out everywhere I could. And there was some sort of, you know, hope that when the opportunity came up, and there was always an underlying hope that it would, I'd get the call. Mm. And I did, and it's affected my business and TRG majorly. Mm. It helped for recruitment, it's helped for brand, it's helped do this great deal that, you know, I've done with Ray White that they've never done in the course of 100 years of business. Like, that's a big compliment, right? Mm. And I value and respect the White family a lot, but that's a big piece, right? Essentially being able to have this brand that has no Ray White on it, but still being part of the Ray White group. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes that's a whole nother conversation, right? Mm-hmm. But it really was instrumental in people's growth here, in profile. It indemnified my brand. And I wasn't naive to think that every single person was going to like it either, because they don't. And there are a lot of people who don't like it, a lot of people who hate it, and a lot of people who, like, you know, saw it or heard of it and don't ever want to deal with me again. And that's fine too, because the amount of extra people it's brought to me that do want to deal with me and opportunities it's created, they far outweigh the negative. Like I always say, the universe has to balance. It's never going to be all peachy. There's always going to be an equilibrium point where it goes, I'm going to reward you with this, but I'm going to take away that. And you just have to expect it. And if you do, you can deal with it a hell of a lot smoother.
Wow. Do you get stopped on the street much?
All the time, man. That's everywhere. I was just in Europe, so Amsterdam. I got everywhere I went.
Really?
Amsterdam. Well, it's international, right?
Wow.
So when I go to the States, I get stopped there. I was walking. Amsterdam was weird because I was walking in the street. There was hundreds of people, and this dude just grabbed me. He's like, "Can we get a photo, my friend?" Like, it's all over the world. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's next level.
It's funny. That isn't funny.
Question from one of the viewers, which I also would like to know as well. In your early years as a solo agent, what were some of the best activities you carried out that you felt built great momentum in your life? And it could be personal or work related.
Phone calls. Yeah.
Yep.
Just phone calls. Like, what
just
was my
calling more than the next guy next to you?
My object. I didn't really care about the people around me. It wasn't necessarily competitive at that stage. It was just like, my objective is to get in the door. Just get in the damn door. I just like to keep it simple. Yeah. What do I have to do to get in the door? So Mark McLeod, who's still my trainer today, right? He taught me this thing. It's golden line. I'm sure you guys have heard it before. Frequency builds trust. Like that to me is the golden line when considering prospecting in real estate. So the more frequently you check in with someone, the more they're going to trust you. And whilst everyone has a criteria for selection of an agent, if trust isn't on that list, you're not getting the business. And so I just adopted that into my everyday activity. And it got to the point where, like, my notes on these people I would call would be so comprehensive that when I was calling them 2-3 years later, I didn't even say, "Hey, it's Gav. I'll call you ring, ring, Kev. Hey, Kev, how are you? Gav, what's happening today?" That was the level I got it to. And so it started as a cold call sometimes 2 or 3 years prior to a sale, and then 2 or 3, 4, sometimes even 6, 7, 8, 9 years later became a $9 million deal, a $10 million deal. And then that was my platform to show them what I could do. And then from there, that other sale, other sale, other sale. And then you start to get momentum and the snowball starts to build.
Do you still call your database for people that aren't selling?
Like no.
No. Just no. Pure warm leads now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I indirectly touch them through through various methods. I think the way I prospect and market myself, again, has evolved over time because you got to keep changing. Otherwise, things become stagnant. So I indirectly touch all of these people who aren't selling, good clients of mine, like little things. End of the year, I send, and you can do your research on this, all of my clients a bottle of Dom Perignon, whether they're selling or they're not selling.
How many clients?
I've got a few, but you got to spend money to make money. Obviously, you know, this office, the rebrand, the hype that's built around that, that's indirectly touching them because there's always an article here, an article there. Every one of my signboards in their area touches them. Every one of my sales touches them. Every news article to every one of my agents who are in here who are killing it touches them. Any social media post I put out there touches them. I'm touching them in a different sort of way. I'm not calling them, pestering them, but I'm letting them know that after all of this time has still passed, I'm still doing what I'm doing and at the absolute highest level, and that I'm not going to stop.
Yeah.
And it works pretty well for me anyway.
What's your sleep pattern like? Because I'm at the moment not dealing with the best sleep. Mm. I'll deal with insomnia some nights, and it's just because I can't turn off my brain.
Yeah.
And it's just work related.
Yeah.
What time are you getting to bed? If you're waking up before 5 a.m.
I'm the happiest. So I'm before 5 on Tuesday and Thursday because I start Pilates at 5. I go 5 to 6 and then I do weights for about an hour, hour and a half.
So what time are you waking up that
this morning? 4:25. 4:25 to 4:30. I let the alarm go off like 2-3 times because I'm not just springing out at that time first one. I'm a very, very happy boy if I can get to sleep between 9 and 9:30.
Yeah.
Like that is my sweet spot. And sleep, particularly when you get to my age, and I don't want to sound old, I've been that guy, but sleep is the key. Sleep is the, you want a silver bullet? The silver bullet is sleep. If you haven't had sleep, you're emotional. It's very, very hard to manage the rigors of real estate. You can't perform at an optimal level.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you've had even a really, really bad day where everything is going wrong, the best way to reset that, I find anyway, get a good sleep, be determined and focused to conquer and win the next day.
Go at it again. Do you cut appointments off at a certain time then?
Nah. And that's why I say my optimal time is 9, 9:30. Now, do I get to bed every night 9, 9:30? No. But when I do, I'm an animal the next day. You know? So yeah. I think everyone has an ideal situation, and that's my ideal. And as much as I can, I try to get myself to bed at that time.
Yeah. So you've just hit number one international again. Do you plan on going for that again next year?
I think if it happens, it happens. I'll always put my shot up, and if I miss, I'll learn from it. So my focus doesn't shift. My passion is listing and selling. And that's why when we start and you say like, you know, you had to take a step back, momentum is like, I've never taken a step back. Mm. The year before that, the person who won deserved it. He was a better man that year.
Mm.
But it was just that year.
Mm.
There's always going to be another year next year. And if this year coming up is not my year, that's fine too. I'll adjust. I'll move forward. I mean, it's definitely not going to be the last number one I win. I'll be winning many, many more in the future because I'm not stopping anytime soon. If anything, I want to ramp up, hit new milestones, go to rarer air and feel even more accomplished because that's just who I am as an individual.
Does that mean harder work and more hours?
It's pretty tough to work harder than I work.
Hmm.
I think you got to be balanced too, right? And as you get older and as you progress through your career and you do it at a high level, it's about making adjustments to maintain and improve that performance. Hmm. Like winning one once is one thing. Staying there is a whole nother game. But if you look at my last 12 months where I got that award, I mean, last Europe, July, I was away 5 weeks. Over Christmas this year, in the last 12 months, I was away 4 weeks. Like, I live a pretty balanced life. Now, when I'm on, I'm on. And actually, the level of discipline that I have given to this industry over the last 15 years has created now a level of freedom to be able to do that. But it wasn't, like I said before, I wasn't getting something for nothing. I'm always giving. So when you give, you get. Yeah. Life is fair on that basis, in my view.
Yeah, I agree with that. In terms of your daily routines, do you have a structure at all, like at all whatsoever? Or is it just free flow?
So always starts early morning with a workout unless it's a rest day.
Yeah.
Eat healthy. And then, like I said to you before, I'm very blessed to be in a position where my days are just full, back to back to back to back, whether it's buyer appointments, whether it's listings, whether it's working with a team, whether it's coaching. I do a lot of work with all of the teams here. I've helped recruit and build a lot of the people who are now super teams. I mean, Tess, who I know you're interviewing later today, who's Ollie's EA, who has been such a pivotal part of that man's success. She's so valuable. I always talk about real estate being a team sport since the beginning because it is a team sport. I placed her for Ollie.
Really?
So, and yeah, 100% at the beginning, you can ask her. And that's just one example of many in this office where people have needed someone to play a role. And again, I'm in a position whereby I get a lot of inquiries, a lot of good people who I can't necessarily fit, but we keep them in a file. And when an opportunity comes up, we place them. Now, they don't always work out, but a lot of the time they do. But yeah, the day's full with all sorts of productive activities.
What brings you the most fulfillment now?
I love the deal still, man. I love the art of the deal gets me in a different way. You couple that with seeing people use the framework that I've provided to succeed, and like I'm in a very happy and fulfilled place.
Is that your purpose now?
My purpose now on a professional level is continue to climb to new heights. Personally, and to continue to help people around and who want to join climb to new heights. I think everyone here is unified by progression. You know, we want to, that's a big part of what TRG is. We want to do better today than we did yesterday. On a personal level, like one day I just want what everyone else wants. You know, I'd love to have and meet the right person, the missing piece to my puzzle. I would love to start a family. I would love to have children. That's definitely on the cards for me, but it's all about timing. It's all about right dynamic, and you got to manage it carefully, right?
It's true. How are you going to find the time when you're working so much though?
That's possible. It's very, very possible. You make time for what's important. Yeah.
How do you, I know we spoke about how you can start at the top end of the market, but how did you separate yourself from your competitors at the start of your career in the top end market when they've been around for 30 years?
Yeah, that was the hard part. So like I said, I leveraged off a guy who had been around for 30 years too. So I was offering the vendor what they were getting with these other guys who have been around a long time, but something new, which was my energy, my enthusiasm, my product knowledge, and my commitment to them that I was just going to go harder than the rest. That compiled with the way I prospected, the frequency in which I checked in with these prospects when I identified that they were going to be a sale in the near or distant future, was a very hard combination to beat at the time, right? I think my first year on my own, I was 23 years old. He's going back. Motherfuckers make me feel old.
She's
the first time ever. So what am I? I'm turning 36 in November. So you're talking 13 years ago was my first year on my own. I was 23 years old. I wrote $440,000.
Which is still good back then.
That was phenomenal back then.
That's big back then.
You're talking, I don't know what you would break that down into the equivalent today, but remember.
You were 23 as well.
Don't worry about the age. Property prices were, we were in different worlds back then. It was whatever you're thinking about now, you can't even imagine what it was then. So it was much harder to make those comms. Like no one was doing $2 million in those days. No one. It was $1 million was the thing. It was the focus. It was the Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah.
And that was still on 50% of the pie because I was leveraging off the principal in the office at the time, and he was taking 50 and I was taking 50. So you can do the maths.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your biggest deal. Which, what property was it, for how much, and how did it come about?
Biggest one was in May.
Yep.
33.5 million dollars. Sorry, it was. For a place that needs probably 10 mil spent on it for a renovation. And then the following month, I matched the underbidder with another property for 25. So that was my biggest string within the space of 4 weeks of each other.
How did that come about?
Initially, the lead was generated by my top associate, Matthew Kemeny, who's my boy, who's a legend, who I'm very, very grateful to be working with. He started with me with no real estate experience two and a half years ago, nothing, cold, used to work at a gym. And yeah, he set it all up. I knocked it out the park, and then, you know, naturally had this buyer left over because I paired two against each other. And just so happened, I got through a house down the road, and then that was on my own accord, and then did that deal 4 weeks later.
How long do you see yourself consistently staying at this level? Because I know even at the level that I'm at, which is not there, it's hard. Like, it's hard to sustain it. Like I said before, I dropped back down in the past year and looking good to go back up this year. And it's taking a lot of energy.
Yeah.
How do you sustain this for such a long period of time?
Well, it's like I told you before, my energy management is something I made myself a master on early on. I just knew how important it was. Time and energy, time and energy. It's not, again, I'm a simple guy. This is not easy, but it's not complicated. This is not complicated stuff. Learn to be a master at managing your time. And learn to be a master at managing your energy. If you learn to identify, no one's going to be perfect every day, but you learn to identify certain things, put you down, put you in a bad mood, don't make you feel good. Like, I'm relentless with cutting those, you know, and you have to be. And then on the other side of the coin, I'm really fanatical about making sure I harness everything that does positively drive my energy. And if it wastes my time, I'm not going to do it. Or if I can implement a structure to help me manage my time better, I will. Like, I got a driver on a Thursday and a Saturday, right? Open for inspection. So now, obviously, with the show and the likes of everything else, you know, people start to notice things like, you know, whether it's a buyer's agent or someone at an open home, oh, be nice to be on TV and have a driver. I'm like, my driver's been working with me for over 10 years.
Really?
100%.
Wow.
He's been working with me longer than Remy.
Wow.
So just put it in perspective. I was always looking at ways in which I could manage my time. So when you say, oh, driver, you don't need a driver. Well, when you've got 10 to 20 open homes on a Saturday and parking's a bitch and you can't be on your phone versus someone driving you around, dropping you off outside, waiting there to pick you up as you finish, driving you to the next one. It's a whole different
frickin' while you're on the phone.
It's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different ball game.
So you've been using a driver for 10 years.
Over.
Yeah. Wow. See, I don't think I have to use that. I don't think I have to have that issue because I get we got space in the hills. Yeah. We have space in the hills.
Sure. East is different.
Very different. Mm. Very, very, very different. Quick question. When I know you've spoken about it before on another podcast, how you used to manage nightclubs in London. How do you think that helped you in real estate?
Service. Every job I had was kind of built around customer service. Like, first job was McDonald's. You know, I served people at the front, then I flipped the burgers at the back, cleaned the floors. I did what I understood every aspect of it, but at the core of it was service. Then I worked in a clothing store. It was service, folding clothes, keeping stuff neat, selling as much as you possibly could. Then it evolved to hospitality, nightclubs, service. You know, in London when I was doing it, I was looking after very high-profile people who had high expectations, who would pay £500 to sit at a table. Again, at this time, I was 18, 19. It's a lot of money back then. It's service. It's providing service. And it was also marketing, because the guy I worked for was a marketing genius. He was just so good. And he had this really, really good brand. And I've always liked to learn. And if you put me around successful people or just general people who have something to offer, 9 out of 10 times I'm going to pick it up. And if I like it and I feel I can use it, I will. And so I was just always sponge mentality. What can I absorb? And then how can I spin it to drive my passion and benefit myself and my team?
What's been the, if you've accumulated all this advice over time, what's the one piece of advice that Gavin can provide to the audience that's yours that you feel has impacted you the most?
Do it your way, man. Don't do it Gavin's way. Like, don't do it Kevin's way. Don't do it your way. There is no right way. Like, I remember people, agents used to say to me, like, oh, you know, you're making this dough and this cash and you should buy more real estate. You know, don't worry about going on that holiday or don't worry about buying that car. And I'm not for 1 second sending a message that, you know, don't buy a lot of real estate. Buy as much real estate as you can. But like I look back on where I'm at, and if I didn't live and I didn't have a lifestyle in a way that I like having a lifestyle and that makes me happy, my property portfolio would be double the size now. I'd be fucking retiring, right? But that's not what I want, and I have zero regrets, and I wouldn't change absolutely anything because I know me and I knew what was going to drive my energy and I knew what was going to get me to where I wanted to go, and nobody could tell me anything else because I had that belief, right? So there is no right way ever. Yep. Whatever feels good to you, so long as it's not wrecked, like don't be stupid. Don't be freaking reckless. Don't be delusional. Now, some of these agents, they're freaking delusions of grandeur where they eat their own shit. They lie so much. They just start to believe it. And
a bit unhinged.
That's a problem, right? I think not only in real estate, just in general, like be realistic. Surround yourself with really good people and find a way that works authentically for you and plan and make sure that your actions every single day map towards that plan. And eventually you will get there or you'll get damn close.
I want to see the differences between Manor and TRG. So at Manor, we're one of the, if not the only office in the hills where you've got multiple killers in the office, meaning multiple $1+ million agents.
Yeah.
TRG seems to be the same out in the east.
Yeah.
What separates TRG from the rest of your competitors in the east?
I think our work ethic, the fact that we're motivated by progression, the brand that we use, how we market properties, and our sheer dedication to getting the best outcome we can for our clients.
I feel like that's identical. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. So we're pretty united here. We're pretty tight here. We're pretty close here. And like I would have a drink or a meal or hang out with every single one of the people that are in this office. And I just want to build on that. It's not about doing it quickly. I'm not feeling like nervous to want to fill the 18 or 17 seats I've got spare here and then the 15 seats I've got spare in Willara. Like we've got to get the right people in that will happen at the right time who are suitable for the brand, who can help the brand and where the brand can help them. And that's the best deal. Like Zach Rabin, great example. This dude came in riding, what, $400,000 last year. He did 1.8. Like this is not by chance. You know, Kai Thomas, I know you've had him on the podcast.
Zach's coming on too, by the way.
Amazing. Well, what Kai was doing, who he was before, who he is now, Pat Cosgrove, Albert Sassoon, a name maybe you don't know, you know, his story in terms of his life and the road he was going down versus the last 12 months he has had.
It's funny. You see these agents when they've been doing it for 10 years, they've never really had, like we had, there's a guy in our office, Scott Dunger, been in the industry for 15 years, never written $1 million, comes to Manor, writes over $1 million in his first year.
Well, a high tide raises all boats. You know, when you're surrounded by it and when you're immersed in it and you see it and you understand 1+1=2 and you can do it too, it benefits everybody.
Yeah.
That's something that plays on my mind now because I started my own buyer's agency this year, both sides, and you lose, when you buy yourself, you lose that rising tide mentality. When you started TRG independently, how did you maintain that staying amongst that rising tide?
Well, I made sure we were still part of the Ray White Group. So we were on Pulse. we're competing with everybody. We're still competing with the Double Bay office when we left. We're still that was a very important piece to me. I think everybody needs a reason or excuse or someone to push them, and it's part of what is going to get the best out of you. Like the 90s Bulls had the Pistons, you know, the Pistons pushed these guys to win their first championship. Without the Pistons, it would have been a different story altogether. So I think, that competitive aspect of it, if interpreted it healthily, that can be very, very useful.
Do you think Ray White Double Bay is one of your biggest motivators?
Absolutely not. It was when I first left, and probably 6 months after leaving, whilst I was still emotional about the whole process. But there is no place for emotion in business. Business is business. And I actually thank Elliot specifically, because without what happened happening, I wouldn't have been here. So again, another pivotal moment where I know it worked out how it was supposed to, and I'm just grateful for it. I'm grateful for all of it, the ups, the downs, the middle points, because it's all contributed to where it's at. And I love where it's at today.
100%.
Yeah.
Man, my last question for you is a personal question.
Mm-hmm.
I've obviously had a step back in the past year. This year we're pushing forward for new heights.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your number one advice for me?
Don't shy away from that feeling of regression, because that can be used as a motivator. Like, conversion of energy is an art. It's an art I've tried to master over the years. It really is a thing, right? So like my first year, when I talk about being a real estate agent on my own, doing 440 grand, the next year I got a little bit cocky. I thought, yeah, I could do this. I thought this was easy. I'm the man. I wrote 380. And instead of repelling that feeling and not immersing myself in it, immersed myself in it and used it, converted the energy as a drive to make sure I'm never going back again. And I didn't. So I think you've got to look at it to say, just accept what's happening. Accept that, hey, you had a year that was behind, but make sure that it's just not going to happen again.
Yeah.
That's good advice. I like that one.
Right.
My last question for you is, what's the biggest thing in your life that's given you the, not the most amount of success, but the most amount of feeling like you've achieved something that's made you proud, not other people?
My people. My people. And like, personally, I'm going through something at the moment, which is quite it's big, right, in my personal life. And when these things happen, you really learn who's real and who is not. And I got to tell you, and I've known this forever and I've always said it, I have the best people around me in terms of a support system on a professional and a personal level. And it's what I'm most proud of.
What a podcast.
Thank you, James.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Appreciate your time.
That was awesome. Thank you.